Soy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help.
Oh yeah, this is power.
So hello everyone, thank you for tuning into Toy Power. I'm Darren, so please don't adjust your computers or anything. I am meant to be introing this one. So just wanted to welcome everyone to Toy Power for episode 65, just out of interest. That means if we were an animated series, we could go into syndication.
So we made it! We made it!
Funnily enough, we might have just a guest today who could actually help animate us. So I just wanted to introduce our regular panel. We have Trent, the heroic master of video.
I am a meat popsicle.
We have, as always, and nearly always, we have our good friend, my good friend Ben, and I'm sure yours as well, our heroic master.
He's everyone's friend.
I'm everyone's friend.
You are.
Hello, all. Friendly Ben.
I don't have any
friendly neighborhood
Ben. Like a meat popsicle, so yeah.
And we have our heroic master of editing, none other than Mr. Frank Allen himself, who's allowed me to invade his toy room yet again.
I wouldn't say invade is the right word, but yes, you're welcome here anytime, Darren.
You don't want to go there. But yeah, thank you for joining us, everyone. We have a huge show today and a very special guest that we were alluding to before, none other than... someone who's a good friend of mine. So we have Leanne Hanna, also known in the fan community as Stratos Macca. Thank you, Leanne, and welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, awesome to have you on, Leanne.
As Darren,
yeah, I've been a big fan of the show for a while, so it's just pretty exciting.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, Darren has been talking you up lots and lots, so, you know, there's a bit of pressure there.
Yeah, I know. I hope I don't disappoint.
Nah,
there's no way you can.
Just for those who don't know, Leanne's actually been supporting us since our very first episode and promoting it. So thank you for that, Leanne. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
So we've got a few questions just to kick off, and I'm happy for us to all have a go at that, if we'd like or not. So... Leanne, talk us through your favourite film as a 10-year-old child.
Favourite film?
Yeah. What were you watching? What was impacting on you?
Probably, let's see, that would have been late 80s. You know, I think around that time it was probably like Ghostbusters.
Nice.
Good choice.
Yep.
A lot of popularity in this room.
Yeah, because we had beta. We had it on beta. And... so we used to watch it over and over. And I mean, the even now, I mean, it's still fantastic. It's still one of my favorite films of all time.
Yeah, it still holds up.
Yep.
It does.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And it was even better when, because the ones that we watched when we were kids were censored, because I guess it was taped off of the television. Mm. So it was even better being able to watch it with, you know, some of the language and scenes that were cut and things.
Yeah, some of Bill Murray's best lines.
I was just going to say, some of Bill Murray's deliveries and like government officials.
Yeah, they got the references to, Your Honour, this is simply not true. This man has no penis.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Could only be delivered by Bill Murray.
Yeah.
All right, Leanne. So question number two, just so our listeners can get to know you a little bit. Name a particularly standout toy-related memory from your childhood. So did you lose a toy? What was your favourite toy? Something, anything that sort of sticks in your brain.
Oh, let's see.
We often have the problem here on Toy Power of narrowing it down to one memory. So,
yeah,
Darren, I'm looking at you.
Yeah, I have a only one problem with that.
Probably. Actually, the first one that comes to mind is pretty bad on my part. But so I had friends next door that had a lot more He-Man figures than I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty jealous of that. And I actually snuck some of his toys. I hid them like in my mom's car. And so when we got back to the house and I had these toys, she was like, "Where did those come from?" And I was like, "Oh, I don't know." And I did eventually give them back, but that I got to play with them longer than
you probably should. It was all worth it. Well, that reminds me.
That's just borrowing, as we like to call it in Australia.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the very story that Mark Taylor, one of the, I guess, alleged creators of the He-Man line. And I think he obviously played a very large role in the creation of He-Man. But he was recounting the stories of when his first resin prototypes were put in basically the playroom where kids would come in and test the products. And from the kids' point of view, there were no adults in the room, but they were all behind a one-way mirror.
Yeah, the glass.
And there were these kids trying to pocket. You know, one was trying to roll Battle Cat up in his jumper, and the other one was trying to tuck He-Man into his bomber jacket. So you were just a He-Man fan. That's what He-Man fans would
exactly,
do.
Exactly.
Any of and those actually, figures stick
Battle
in your
Cat
mind?
Was one of the figures.
That's a harder one to smuggle, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to get points for that.
Very good. We're really interested, I guess, being in Australia, we're a little bit removed from this, so it would be really interesting to get your thoughts on all the feeling that's happening over there in the US with the Toys R Us closures, and I guess what that sort of means on the ground, how that's impacting people or how that's impacting yourself, just to maybe give us a quick flavour of what's going on over there.
You know, it's really depressing because, you know, I had really good memories of going there as a kid. I mean, when KB Toys closed, that was another, you know, kind of a big deal, but Toys R Us is even more so for me. Yeah. And there's a location just down the street from me. And then where I work, there's another location like further down the road. And when they first announced the closures or that, you know, a bunch of the stores are going to be closing, you know, I went to that list and I was like dreading that it was going to be the one right next to me. And it was actually the one next to where I work that was closing. So, you know, and we actually went in there and just kind of looked around and, you know, bought some stuff on clearance and all that. And we're kind of hoping that was going to be it, you know,
yep.
But, you know, I think you guys mentioned this actually on one of the other shows about Pixel Dan's video. I thought that was great. Like he pretty much summed up, you know, kind of how a lot of us are feeling about it, because it's was such a big part of our childhood, and it's a real shame.
Yeah, it's a tragedy, and he really conveyed that emotion really well for someone who was on the opposite end of the planet to just sort of watch what it meant to him and so many other people like yourself. You know, it's such a sad moment. I mean, in Australia, we feel, you know, we kind of rest you guys there because we've lost a lot of toy retailers and a lot of toys don't even come out here anymore. So like they used to. So we kind of feel we're racing you to the bottom. But but on that, it's still not lost on us when you hear something like that. You know, it's just going to leave such a big hole.
And it's the history of these properties. You talked about KB Toys and the legacy yep. that's got, and that being, I guess, a sort of a mall sort of centric store, and then to lose the big department style toy store, and it's really the last bastion of the almost the dedicated toy store now that it's becoming, I guess, just another department in a Walmart or a Target or a Kmart now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a real shame.
And anyway, last question. This is Ben. So personal reflections, if you went to a Toys R Us near you right now, what sort of what would you be seeing over there? So do you have a Toys R Us close to you? Have you been to a Toys R Us in the last week or two? And what does it look like compared to what it used to look like, let's say 6 months ago?
Right now, at least I went into the one nearest us a few weeks ago, and it was, so this particular store, you know, they hadn't announced that this one was closing, so that one kind of, you know, looked like it normally would, but the other store that I went into, you know, they had like clearance signs everywhere, and you know, there was a lot of empty shelves, which is kind of sad. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, I actually talked to one of the ladies that was at the checkout, and you know, she was, you know, telling us, like, I was asking her about Yu-Gi-Oh cards actually, and she said that stuff all had gotten shipped out to other stores, I guess, that weren't closing. So, you know, it was kind of sad, because you feel for the employees, you know, because you're kind of there to look at deals and things like that, and they're losing their jobs. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, you know, so I felt pretty, you know, pretty sad. But I'm assuming, I mean, I would like to go to the one closest to me to kind of see how that looks now. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, fair enough.
I find sometimes, just from my own experiences, that sometimes that's an important process of saying goodbye to something that has been a big part of something you're a fan of or participate in. So as sad and tragic as it is, it's just a big part of that process of, I guess, you know, for want of a better term, accepting what and believing what's going on around you. It's one thing to hear about it. It's another thing to actually get in there and see it, you know, painful. Don't get me wrong. There's a few stores I can list here that still ring true to me now, many years after they closed. But yeah, it's just important in knowing that you were there, you know, that last time, I mean, or whatever, even, as well. And
yeah, even it's weird, but even like, the smell of the store, like when you go in and like it's, you know, the plastic and, you know, I don't know, it's like a childhood,
yeah,
that new toy, you know, smell
thing.
Yeah. I have that thing, you know,
it's the carcinogens in the plastic, say,
but yeah.
It smells so good,
it's euphoric.
It was a department store in Adelaide that you've probably heard me waxing lyrical about on here a lot, called John Martin's, and I still have that thing 20 years after it closed, about going down the ramp into the toy department, and, and the red carpet and the double room and the plethora of toys that were there. You know, as others might remember, I have mentioned in the bias in the past that my late grandfather also worked there. But, you know, even before I knew that he'd worked there, and that I had that strong association and that strong pull to that toy department, it was by far the best toy department that our city of Adelaide has ever seen. And so I can understand that smell, that texture of being there, and you know, how strong those memories can stay with you, and they can seem so real that, you know, even as recently as a few years ago, I'd occasionally catch myself thinking, I've got to go back into that toy department again, you know, and then reminding myself like a millisecond later, you can't.
It's gone, yeah.
Yeah.
Look, Darren here, and you've known Darren for a long time, Leanne. He never says a bad word about anyone or anything, but that new department store that stands on that hallowed ground, do not mention that, or you'll rile him up and there'll be obscenities flying left, right, and center.
We shouldn't actually say that, because a good friend of ours works in the complex.
When that happens to these Toys R Us, R Us is near me, it's going to be the same thing.
That's right. I mean, because there's just, there's so much of that emotion and feeling in it, because these are people's childhoods and with fond memories. Yep. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And I just want to say to Ben Rosenthal, if you're listening, that was not a shot you having a place in that complex. You know, Trent shouldn't have mentioned it. But, you know, full respect to you, Ben. It's hard not to have those kind of feelings. It's part of, you know, and it probably sounds silly to some people, but it's part of, you know, the grief of something that was a big part for a long time. You know, when you're into something like toys, I think those sort of memories, you know, it's so nostalgia-based already.
It's time for the most powerful character spotlight in the universe, Mountain Punch.
So we might move to the character spotlight now, which is a character that you may be familiar with, Leanne, by the name of Stratos.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Do we want to go through a little bit of Stratos' history? Who wants to...
We sure can. I wrote down some notes here, but we'll just keep this as free-flowing as we can. So, character spotlight is really just to have a look at a particular character, and Stratos, being, I guess, one of the original Masters of the Universe characters, holds a very special place in anyone's character spotlight. And I was sort of reflecting on this, probably out of that that eight, the original eight back, he's probably the one, maybe with Zodak, that probably gets the lesser amount of love out of those original eight. So I was really excited to dig out my Dark Horse character encyclopedia and turn to the full 2 pages on Stratus, which maybe, incidentally, Leanne, you've had something to do with, potentially, or I'm sure there would have been some sort of contribution there.
I was sort of looking for him on the front cover, but...
I know. I tried.
Stratos in the Masters of the Universe.
So I'll just go through some of the things I picked up, and then I'll shoot around the room for everyone to have a bit of a discussion on. I've sort of broken this discussion into toys, Filmation, other media, and Mike Young Productions, but we'll see how we go. So, like I said, he was an original character, one of the first eight. Interestingly, his very first depiction in, I understand, the first mini-comic was he was illustrated as an evil warrior, so there might have been a moment in time where, you know, as Master of the Universe and the story is forming, you've got Stratos being imagined by the first illustrator as being evil, but that very quickly changed and he was sided with He-Man and the good guys. I guess if you look at probably the main canon for Stratos, he is king of the avian people, which are the bird-like, monkey-like people of Eternia. And there's various different incarnations of, how his flight comes into play, whether, you know, the figure is packed with a jetpack, but also these wing attachments. So there's various different ways of how that flight takes place. Is it a, you know, magical egg, or is it the jetpack that primarily gives the powers? How are the wings grown from the arms? Are they organic in some, or are they an attachment, and all those sorts of things. In terms of the toy, Master of the Universe is well known for sharing parts. So Stratos shares a lot of parts with another Wave 1 character, which is Beast Man. Obviously with the different armor and wing attachments and head sculpt. And interestingly, as a piece of trivia, I think he's the only figure that doesn't come with a weapon.
He is. Yeah. I always thought he was very dubiously ripped off, actually, even as a child, for not being granted a weapon.
But I... And... You know, he doesn't really have a gripping hand as well.
No.
I almost see sort of the wings as maybe how they spent their tooling budget in that way. The sort of, we'll give him a backpack, we'll give him 2 wings, and that's it. We're done with the tooling budget. Yeah. So I don't know if that was something there.
Well, he's... I think the flying, you know, that he was the only character, certainly from that first wave, that had the power of flight sort of thing. I mean, we're talking, you know, pre Wind Raider and any of this sort of stuff. I think that was his quote unquote action feature, is how I always saw it. I also like his, his head sculpt is really, it's got those sort of almost trying to be like the old school, aviator goggles type thing, but with a, you know, sort of bit of styling to them. And am I wrong in saying that in the mini comics or in some incarnations, he had a beard, or he had some sort of facial hair?
He's got a sort of beard sort of sculpted on his face.
Yeah.
Because it's the same grey as the rest of his skin tone.
Oh, because it's a Beast Man head underneath it all? Is that?
No, it's a unique face, but because there's no extra applications of paint for his face, he's sort of a little bit of sculpted. You can sort of make out a little bit of a beard in my eyes, I reckon.
Okay. Yeah, I see.
Cool.
Yeah, put your rose, tinted glasses on. Yeah, he's got a beard.
Okay.
Yeah. Leanne, you might be able to sort of dig a bit deeper into some of the backstories for Stratos, and how he's sort of depicted in different incarnations. He certainly, in terms of Filmation, he certainly wasn't one of the central characters, but almost appeared, you know, as one of the sort of the secondary characters that would appear from episode to episode.
Yeah. Initially, he was, you know, a lot more prominent in, like, the mini-comics. And actually, early on in the mini-comics, he, I guess before they settled on him having, you know, the gray skin, he has, like, peachy skin, like, you know, like He-Man or, you know, like, you know, a lot of the others. And that only lasted, I think, 2 mini-comics, maybe. before they went to the, you know, the gray skin, the regular look that we're familiar with. And he was, he showed up a lot in the early Filmation cartoon series. And then he kind of, you know, as you get further into the first season and especially the second, he just kind of disappears. So he, but then you have the Betrayal of Stratos episode in the second season, which, you know, all of a sudden, you know, there he is. And it's, you know, an episode totally focused on him, which is awesome. But yeah, it's interesting because, like in the mini comics, talking about, you know, the power of flight, and, you know, you had the egg in the Filmation series that kind of supposedly gave them, you know, the power of flight. But in the mini comics, it was an emerald staff that Skeletor actually steals. And so I kind of felt like they kind of tried, they kind of separated it in a way, because you had the staff of Avion, and then you had, you know, the egg later on. So it was kind of like they took the emerald staff and kind of separated them into two different things, which is kind of interesting.
That's a very interesting point. I hadn't thought of it like that. But yeah, the staff of Avion and the egg effectively are Filmation's equivalent of one thing. Yeah, that's very cool.
So I was just wondering, Leanne, like, you know, when, particularly when we talk here regularly about our favourite characters and why we love them, and the typical one we keep going back to is who's your favourite turtle and why. In the case of something like Masters, when you've got these big characters in every sense of the word, in He-Man and Skeletor and Man at Arms and stuff, what is it that draws you to Stratos? Obviously, you're a big fan of the character. It's your, you know, your handle on the internet and stuff. Just what is it? Is it the color scheme? Is it that he can fly? Like, what's what really, you know, draws you to the character?
Was it your first figure?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It actually wasn't. I actually didn't get him. My friend across the street, the one that I took his figures, he had Stratos. Yeah, borrowed, that's right. He had Stratos, and I was so jealous. Stratos was always my favorite because he could fly. I thought that was awesome. Because I've always been into superheroes and things like that, and I just thought he was cool. I thought he looked really cool. I thought the whole concept of him being the leader of these bird people, which was really neat. Avion, you know, being this world up in the Mystic Mountains, that was awesome. Like, I just really liked the concept. And for some reason, I always end up becoming attached to not really main characters, but like background characters or like sidekicks or whatever. Yeah, so I don't know. I just, you know, kind of gravitated towards Stratos. And so, you know, in the early days online when people were talking about, oh, He-Man and stuff, I was like, let me give Stratos some love. You know, Stratos was the best. And, you know, so.
So then, yeah, by extension of that, do you just like dislike Hawk just naturally? Like, is she got your dream job? Like.
No, Hawk's interesting. It's interesting the way she kind of developed too, because, you know, in the mini comics, Stratos was married. He had a wife, Delora, and in the early mini comics, she's just, you know, this plain human girl. She's got black hair, and then I think the Ladybird books kind of changed her into a bird woman. Like, she had the, you know, goggles, like, you know, similar to Stratos, and she had wings. And so if I had to choose, that would probably be my favorite depiction of her, is what she looked like in the Lady Bird books. And then in Filmation, they ended up, you know, she shows up in one episode, but she's Stratos' sister in Filmation. And they did that because they didn't think that kids would want to see love interests or would be interested in love interests in, you know, the cartoon series. So they made her his sister. And then for the Mike Young show, they kind of combined Delora and Hawk, you know, into one character, and Hawk became his sister in the Mike Young show. So, you know, it's pretty interesting how it evolved. always found that fascinating.
Yeah, and the decisions they make because of the audience and how they think that's going to be interpreted, which is fascinating. Kids just aren't into romantic angles at all. So write that stuff out.
Yeah. It's quite a lot of toy companies who think, you know, female action figures don't sell.
Yeah.
Yeah, and no one's going to want them.
And similarly, we sort of talked about in Filmation him being more of a character in season one, but then having the reoccurrence in season two. And the way I sort of, having read through the mini comics, it's a similar sort of theme that if you're not probably, you know, He-Man, Skeletor, Man-at-Arms, Teela, maybe, you know.
Orko.
Yeah, but in terms of Wave 1 characters.
Oh, right, yeah.
Generally, then, when they're trying to release a new mini comic, they're bringing in the characters that are out in that particular wave. So
right.
A character like a Stratos, a character like Zodak, they certainly featured very much in those first mini comics, which were almost not drawn as a comic, but, you know, text with an illustration on one part.
Mm.
And then they probably didn't get a lot more love in terms of mini comics throughout that run.
Yeah, I mean, and I can understand that. You know, they're trying to bring in new characters and, you know, kind of focus on that. I think one of the reasons, another reason that I like Stratos is because he's one of the originals.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I kind of feel like, you know, he's a big deal to me.
Yeah.
Because he's still one of the originals.
Yeah. And very true. I was trying to compile a list of the toys he'd appeared in. And anyone, feel free to stop me if I've got it wrong or I've missed some out. But he's got a lot of toys. Being a Wave 1 character, you do get a lot of toys, which is a good thing. So obviously we had the first version of Stratos. And interestingly, he's one that has a fairly common variant, which is the reversed wings, which we talked about. So the red wings and the blue wings and the red jetpack and the blue jetpack. Darren, you noted a pink wing variant.
Yeah, there's a pink wing version. That,
who would House be crazy enough? Oh, the French. So is that something that's sought after? Do people go after the pink wing?
Yeah, very sought after. It's rare. Right. It's rare. Yeah. And it's a holy grail for a number of people.
I don't have that one.
I don't have that one either. And
Frank's got a 3D printer here. We'll just we'll whip some up.
It can be done.
you just tell us what shade of pink you want.
So just with that, to me, this seems like the old, like the in Transformers Generation 1, there's the argument of, is Frenzy red or Rumble blue? Because in the animation, compared to the toys, it's reversed.
Yeah.
And so it's this age-old argument of which one's red, which one's blue. When you picture Stratos, you know, are the wings, in the classical toy sense, are the wings blue or are they red? I have my answer. I don't know what
for me, they're...
Yep, go, Leanne.
For me, they're red.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because of the Filmation cartoon, but also I had the red winged version as a kid. So it wasn't until later that I actually got the blue one. Mm. So to me, you know, the Ultimate Stratos has the red wings.
It's a 50-50 split, really, isn't it?
It's a 50-50 split in terms of what was made, apparently. So, or pretty close thereabouts. So they're both pretty widely available. For me, it's red too, just simply because I think that's how I'm used to seeing him depicted in so many different mediums, both within the toy line and outside of it. And I know that Frank's got the blue wing version right here.
And so that's the thing, because to me, it's blue because that's the one I had. And that's mine from childhood sort of thing. And so then I think the first time I realized this was a thing was the 2002 reboot, and the default Stratos that came had the red wings. And it really jarred me when I first saw
that's
it.
That's not the right Stratos.
Exactly. I was like, what?
Yeah.
And then, you know, did my research and found out, it's a thing. So, yeah, interesting.
So then we get to the commemorative series. So being, a Wave 1 character, commemorative series did a number of the, pretty much from the first three waves they took characters from.
Yeah, they did.
Predominantly, but they did all the Wave 1 characters. Then 2002 got relaunched, and we got a very nice version of Stratos with some really good arm articulation now.
Amazing.
You know, Mattel at this time weren't following the standard articulation they had in the past. They were adding extra articulation. We got some extra joints to be able to raise him into the flying motion. And I think this is the first line that gave us our first Stratos variant, which, if I'm getting my name right from memory, was Sky Strike Stratos. Am I getting that right?
That sounds
down?
Right, yeah, to me.
Which came in
that
the
man. That sounds great. Right.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I think that's always, in my view, and people may sort of differ in this view, but variants were a really prestigious thing in Masters. You had to be a really big character to get a variant. So if you think about, you know, He-Man, Skeletor, they had variants throughout the line. Hordak had some. So it was, to the end of the line, not a lot of characters were given variants. It was mainly the leaders of factions. And then this concept of when 2000X came along, giving characters variants was just, to me, it started to elevate them in toy form. Yeah, you're now in that realm that of character, the club that gets you a variant. So I thought that was really cool.
Can I just jump in? I have to say, even though I didn't ever own the character, from a visual point of view and from a standpoint of the evolution of the character, I have to say this 2002 Stratos is my favourite, with the big jetpacks, so you can hold them, you can, you know, punch them on and just really shoot through the sky. It actually gave meaning to how he could fly, like, you know, because as we spoke before with the vintage toy, you were like, how does he fly? Does he flap his arms, or does he, you know, use a jetpack to...
Or is it a magical egg?
Yeah, exactly. There was that, you know, grey area. But with the 2002 one, you knew how he flew. Yep. You knew, you know, he had some power behind him, and he just, you know, jumped through. And overall, it was a really beautiful execution of the character, development of the character, he was, you know, he was on the leadership board with the other sort of species of people standing alongside King Randor. So I thought that was, you know, quite an important evolution of the character.
Absolutely.
And he had that legacy in Mike Young, where he was sort of one of the founding masters.
Yep. Yeah.
Which kind of elevates. And I think there's some beautiful stories in Mike Young, particularly the, and I'm not going to get the name of the episode right, but it's the one where basically it's the tension, the political tension between the Buzz-Off people, the Andorians, and
I think that was Sky War.
Yeah,
Sky War.
I was going to say Sky War. Yeah.
And then sort of Skeletor behind the scenes doing typical Skeletor stuff and trying to fracture the relationship and bring it to all-out war.
The Puppet Master.
Yeah, which is a really clever episode, which we might touch on a bit later. In terms of the toys, then we, if I'm correct, we then go into Masters of the Universe Classics, where again he got a figure, no accessories, until later on when both the Staff of Avian and, which is the green-like staff with the egg-like top, was packed in with, I think it was Goatman. Goatman. And then Isa also had another...
It had the filmation version
of the staff as well. Yep. So that was really cool to kind of get those. Even though the sort of the filmation version couldn't really be held because of the fact they'd forgotten to sort of do the open hands.
They've chosen not to, because they were trying to recreate the cross-cell art.
Which
has two open hands.
That's where Blue Tack is your best friend.
Toys R Us did the a line that I think got about six or so releases, which was DC Universe Classics versus Masters of the Universe. And he got, Frank, for your point, in that line, he was paired up with Hawkman from the DC Universe, and they put out a two-pack, this time with the reversed wings.
The correct wings.
And also, this time, in the second series of the two-pack, you could rotate his wings around.
Where it was glued on the first.
So that was cool, because then you could rotate it around, lift his arms up, and he'd look like he was ready to, you know, flap his arms and take off. Whereas the other one, I always had trouble posing him in a sort of flight mode, because his wings were always sort of underneath his chest sort of thing, facing the ground. It was awkward. So that was a welcomed upgrade from a toy stance point of view.
Yeah. The next figure he got was a jumbo version of the original Masters of the Universe Mattel version, just blown up, so basically a bigger size, and that was done by Mattel as part of their Matty Collector line.
The only issue I had with that, sorry to keep jumping in, is he was packed in with his armor, his jetpack off to the side of the pack.
Yep.
So he's essentially a naked buck.
Yep.
You know, chest or hairy chest. Some people might like it. Some people, you know, like might. But it just took the visuals away from the character. Yep. It was just too much grey for me on a Minton card. Fine if you're going to crack it open and put his chest armor on, but from a visual point of view, Minton card, I didn't think that was the right decision to go down.
I think it was
that's actually why I opened mine.
Yeah,
because
interesting. Yeah,
I was going to leave him in the package, but he didn't look right, so that's why I opened my figure.
You
can understand characters like Webstore, where the vintage line had his armor off, and so they
recreated that.
You recreated that in the classics line. But Stratos had his armor on, you know, and I think Beastman was the same without any armor.
In the Mattel version, the Jumbos, he doesn't have the armor on.
Yeah,
so I think it was too big to fit in the packet with the armor on. That's my
quite a bigger bubble.
Yeah. And they already struggle. Those bubbles, if you look carefully, the ones I got were actually had little bits of tape on at the top. Because the bubble was so heavy, I think it was causing stress on the glue, so they'd actually reinforced it with some sticky tape. So maybe that's sort of part of the problem. I've only got one more to count off, and then you can correct me if I've missed any. In sort of the normal 5.5-inch to 6-inch scale.
So not Funko Pops?
I'm not counting Funko Pops, no. But
don't swear on this podcast, right?
Last year, Super 7, who picked up the license from Mattel, did a 3-pack for PowerCon, for their PowerCon exclusive. And that, as Leanne was talking about, the peachy-coloured version, or what we would refer to as the mini-comics version, got a release. And that was actually an interesting release because it had additional sculpted parts. I think he sort of got a necklace that kind of goes over the top and maybe a bit of a re-sculpt of the belt.
And he got toes.
Yeah, and he got the different foot. So instead of that sock foot, which is a very, you know, harkens back to the vintage toy line where he does have that non-sculpted sock foot, which they did recreate in the first classics figure. They did go and give him that more beast-like, which I think, you know, nice that we've got the sock version as a homage to the original toys, but beautiful that we got that version with the foot, I think, as well. So that's a figure I was very happy to get my hands on. Did I miss anything?
Darren, I'm thinking there might have been the minis from Mattel on the Maddie website.
Yeah, there was.
Also, I'm remembering the little 2002 line that accompanied or was released around the same time as the main 6-inch Four Horsemen line that had a Stratos in it.
If I remember correctly, 3 inches tall.
Yeah,
non-articulated.
Does that sound correct to everyone?
Yeah.
And I reckon there might have been a third one in the Masters of the Universe versus the Snake Man wave. Can't remember the name of it off the top of my head though, but does that sound correct, Leanne?
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, the Snake Armor.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Stratos.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So that's...
Was it Serpent Claw? Or that was...
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yep. I think you're right. So that's pretty good turnout.
That's a huge turnout.
Yeah, that's a really good result. We might move on from Filmation. We've talked a little bit about comics. We talked a bit about Lady Bird books as well. The DC relaunch, you know, DC have had the license recently and they've done a number of crossovers and main story arcs. And interestingly, we're going to get another crossover shortly as well, I think in July. But Stratos got a bit of love in that as well, as probably more of a background character, but they now fitted him out with sort of the full-faced helmet. What as an artist, Leanne, what were your thoughts on the... And probably as an artist that's actually illustrated Stratos, what were your thoughts with some of the design choices they'd made in that new DC comic books series?
It was interesting. I wasn't really a fan of the armored version of Stratos. I kind of liked the idea of the full face armor.
Yep.
But I thought he was... I think he actually had the blue wings in those comics. I'm pretty sure. But I think most of his armor was red. And that kind of looked... It was just really different.
Yep.
Because the character's always had... you know, he's never been like fully armored up, so that was a little bit weird.
Yeah,
but
that's probably some of the criticism from a visual point of view of a lot of what they're trying to do in, I guess, modern Masters comics. And I was glad to see the sort of the Thundercats crossover go back to some of the original design roots. But it feels to me like, you know, in 2011 when Superman sort of lost the red underpants and only now have they brought that back. It felt to me like the comics wanted to almost position him for a movie to say, well, how do we do this red underpants thing in live action? It's tricky. Yeah. So, okay, let's just make the comics reflect maybe a more up-to-date look that modern audiences can buy into. And I felt like that was driving a lot of the design choices in some of those comic book series, which then as a fan can kind of leave you going, well, it's not really what I'm expecting and it's too far a departure from what I'm imagining.
I've always
wondered.
Yeah,
I think...
Sorry, go
ahead. Didn't they give He-Man like red pants, I think?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's just kind of... I don't know. It's different.
Try putting those red pants on Arnie in a Conan sequel. I think he wouldn't treat you too well, would he?
I've always wondered how Stratos might look. As we said, you know, Wave 1 character, how he might have looked in the Master of the 80s Dolph Lundgren movie. You know, we got sort of very interesting takes on your Skeletors and the Sorceress and Man-at-Arms and these sorts of people. I'm wondering, I'm almost trying to fan cast it in my head. Who would you get from that time who would be... I guess it really doesn't matter because they'd probably have the goggles on the entire time.
You probably couldn't afford Sean Connery, but...
Oh, man. I definitely think he wouldn't have flown given the budget.
No, they would have given him the Cosmic Key Mark too to get around. And I say that with some love and respect for the 80s film, but they wouldn't have had the budget for Flight. But that's an interesting thought, Frank, because what I just reflected on as soon as you mentioned that is that he and Zodak are the only two from the original Ape-Man
that
didn't make
it. Just thinking that as well.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point. You have to wonder how close he came, whether he was considered, whether Zodak was considered.
I think
I could see Zodak being considered more so than Stratos just because of the budget constraints. I couldn't see, I couldn't see them having a flying character like Stratos.
You can almost see a role for Zodak too in maybe tipping the scales back a little bit if they were on the line, given that he was meant to be neutral on that. Given that Skeletor was taken over Grayscale, you can see a role in the story that seems almost natural for Zodak, just thinking off the top of my head here, whereas Stratos, maybe not quite so much.
He could fly in and steal chicken. Was it chicken or beef ribs or whatever they're selling?
He could.
Instead of using that claw thing.
Given that he's a bird man, he probably would have been vegan and he would have said, I don't approve of Gwildor and Duncan eating the chicken, so I'm taking it away.
Hey, if he replaced Gwildor, I'm down with that. Like,
I hear that. I'm on board with that.
Very good. All right. Well, is there anything to wrap on Stratos? Any other final closing comments we want to add?
I reckon maybe just a shout out to Lou Scheimer and Scott McNair, who voiced Stratos in the filmation, obviously, for Lou Scheimer and Mike Young Productions for Scott McNair. That's probably the main chunk of it, but Leanne might have some more Stratos information for us.
Actually, speaking of Lou Scheimer, I have a little story that's kind of funny. Years ago, my husband was interviewing, old creators and people involved in the animation industry back then, and he actually talked to Lou.
Oh, wow.
For a while, and I think we actually still have tapes of that because recorded a conversation, just like talking about Lou's life and, things like that. And of course, I was too scared to talk to him because I was nervous and all of that. So Rod had told him, my wife Leanne is a really big fan of Stratos that you voiced in the Filmation show, and he couldn't remember who Stratos was. he said, you mean Orca? He was gray, you know, and he could fly and stuff.
That is, that story didn't go where I thought it was. I thought he was just going to pull out the Stratos voice and go, "Hello, Leanne."
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Do it in that voice. Oh,
Wow. But that's okay.
But this is it's a real thing. I mean, we've gone to a lot of whatever comic conventions or pop culture conventions make their way down to Australia, and obviously we don't have the range that you guys are exposed to in the US. But that, when I sit on panels where they're talking to, you know, voice actors, that's quite a common response from these voice actors is, I really don't remember doing that role.
Could you imagine Rob Paulson and all the stuff that he's done?
He's done hundreds and hundreds of characters in his time, maybe even thousands.
I totally understood because, plus, I mean, Stratos wasn't in that many episodes of the show, so... Mm. You know, I totally understand. I mean, they do so much work.
Yeah, and it's the passage
so many
of time, too.
Characters, in, you know, totally understandable.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great story.
I got a shout out in one of my favorite things, depictions of Stratos aside, and it comes from the 2002 era, and it's the issue 7 of the Image or the MV Creations comic book covers that has Stratos's eye. Like, it's a really, really close up of his eye, and in the reflection of his eye is a sort of a skeleton Avion character, all in skeleton. And the story is actually done by you, Leon Shaw Hanna. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
That cover is just outstanding, and definitely one of the high points of Stratos in that art form, I think, because it speaks volumes. So yeah, awesome. I was so on board with that comic book series. I just adored it.
So did I.
So sorry, just to clarify, you wrote that story?
I did the illustration. Write it. It was mostly Val Staples that wrote it.
Yep.
And then I just kind of, you know, put in, I had some input into different things, but it was mostly Val that wrote it. And then I drew it.
Did you have much to do with the cover? Sorry to cut you off.
Oh, the cover?
Yeah.
I drew the cover.
Oh, look at that. There you go. Nice.
That wasn't
planned at all, was it? That was literally Ben talking about his favorite cover.
So
there you go.
And I had to hold myself back because I knew the answer before you gave it that you drew it, because you were actually kind enough to sign one for me.
What's interesting about that cover is when I was drawing the skeleton, we were trying to work out like the anatomy of it, like how his wings would attach to his, because in the Mike Young show, you know, the wings came out of his forearms. So we were trying to figure out like how the bone structure would work and all that stuff. And so I remember that when I was putting that together.
That's a lasting, that cover alone is just, you know, when you talk about Stratos and talk about, you know, favorite memories and things, that cover alone was just so impacting on my collecting days. It's, never forgotten that one. So it's amazing to be, you know, all these years later to be talking to one of the creators of it. So well done. Massive respect.
Beautiful.
Absolutely. I didn't mean to cut you off, Leanne. I was just going to say what some people may not realize about you is that you're also the editor of that comic for almost the entirety of its run.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that deserves a lot of credit. I mean, you've had a huge input in Masters of the Universe for many years now and influenced some of the directions the property's taken, and so much so that I believe there's a part of Eternia that's even named after you.
There is.
Feel free to share that name with our listeners.
It's Leonasia.
Nice.
Yeah.
Just a nice little tribute.
That was actually before I started working for MV Creations, because I came on board, I think maybe the second issue had just come out. Of the first volume that they did. And I think it was in the first issue where Val had written that in there. And I read it and I was like, did a double take. And I was like, I emailed him and I was like, is that what I think it is? And he was like, yep. So that was pretty cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who wouldn't love to be immortalized in the world of Eternia?
Brilliant. Very good. That's fantastic. I really enjoyed that segment, getting to know a key Masters character a little bit more from you, Leanne, as well, being a massive fan. That was great. Now, I think we are in store for a quiz.
Should we just... Sorry, I was going to say, just before we do that, should we give Leanne just a chance to talk about anything that she wants to talk about projects-wise?
Yeah.
She's worked on about to work on or working on currently, whatever you like. Sorry to cut everyone off.
Oh, okay. Well, first off, if anybody from Super 7 is listening to this, I want a Filmation Stratos figure.
Oh, yes.
Good. Most campaigning likely. For
most red definitely. Boots. And
yep.
I want one of those. Yeah. And also, I'd like an army builder set of Birdmen. Would be awesome.
Yeah, cool.
I think there's a good chance of one or both of those happening.
I love the fact that you're using Toy Power to campaign. Yeah. To Super 7. If, like, you know, we're the mechanism that's powerful enough to influence change. I just love that.
Let's see. So I guess what I'm working on right now, Rod and I do a webcomic called Blue Milk Special, which is a Star Wars parody webcomic. And we've actually been doing that since 2009. And we parodied the original trilogy and like the holiday special, the Splinter of the Mind's Eye novel. And we took a break after we finished Return of the Jedi because we're working on another project, which hopefully will be coming out in a few months. But that's kind of consumed a lot of our time. But we just started doing, actually last week, we debuted the start of the Thrawn trilogy.
Oh, nice.
So the Heir to the Empire series is what we're starting on now. So it's kind of cool to be back in, you know, publishing that again.
So how does one get their hands on the webcomics?
The webcomics are all free online. It's bluemilkspecial.com.
Yep.
And you can go start at the beginning and, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of strips free to read online.
Beautiful.
Cool.
Go check it out.
Yep.
All
right. I don't know if you want me to talk about anything. I've done some Transformers stuff not too long ago.
Yeah. I always go into the store and I don't purchase these particular toys, but the Robots in Disguise toy line.
Yes.
I always think of you when I'm looking at those, the beautiful artwork that's adorning the front of those packaging, which are all individual character picks of, you know, pretty prominently on the top of the box or top of the card.
The card, yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, a lot of those. My friend Matt Tyree draws those.
Yep.
So shout out to Matt. And then I color a lot of them. Val colored a lot too, Val Staples. And so it's really crazy because, you know, when you work on these things, you never know what they're going to be used for, if they're going to be used for toy packaging or actually Matt just showed me a picture the other day. They were on drink bottles somewhere,
cool.
Like randomly, which is really cool.
Yep.
A couple years ago, Rod and I went to New Zealand, sees a Kiwi. And, when we were there, we went into a toy shop and there were, you know, there was stuff there, like Transformer stuff there that I colored, and it's just crazy. Yeah.
Did he just start autographing drink bottles? I've just increased the price of your stock. Here you go.
They're pretty common here, too.
It's really cool.
Yeah, Robots in Disguise gets good coverage here. So, that's great. Fantastic. That's awesome. That's always great to see someone that's passionate about the community and the properties being involved. So that's wonderful that you get that opportunity to do that work.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, it still blows my mind, you know, when I see stuff in toy stores that I've worked on. It's really crazy.
Yeah, that's superb. Very good. All right, with that, I think it's time to get the Grey Cells working with the Frank Special.
Riddle me this, riddle me that. Time to start thinking because the Quizmaster's back.
It's like being back at school when you have to sit that exam you didn't study for. But hopefully in the dark recesses of your mind.
this is a little bit more fun than that. So basically, basically what this is centered around, I don't know if you guys are familiar, but there's a Twitter account out there and it's a bit of a meme thing where you explain a movie badly, right? And it's using as short a sentence as possible. And to give you a couple of examples to sort of get your brain thinking about it, you say the movie Avatar, the James Cameron one. It's Pocahontas with blue people, right? That's the sort of thing.
It's Fern Gully.
Exactly. And there's lots for Avatar, yeah, let me tell you. Another example would be, say, Karate Kid. Old man pretends to teach a teenage boy karate in order to make him do house chores. Right? That's the sort of thing. Yep. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to give you the description and you need to tell me what property or movie are we talking about. Now, I've tried to keep it... there are some movie stuff in there, but a lot of these things are tied to toy properties, so it's stuff we should all be familiar with. I think what's probably going to be easier is I'll just put it out there and anyone shout out the answer. Going around the room just probably takes a bit too long. No points or anything, but before you ask, Leanne has already won, so it's
fine. Thank you.
All right, so we'll start out with some easy ones and see how we go from there. So, a grumpy billionaire beats up a homeless clown.
Batman.
Yep. a group of friends spend 9 hours returning jewellery.
Goonies?
Oh, not bad, but no.
Nine.
Spend a really long time returning jewellery.
How many friends?
Nine
friends.
Oh, I was going to say Ocean's 11, but then my maths kicked in.
Don't they steal jewelry? Isn't that what they do?
Well, in one they put it back and then they pretend they've stolen it. I think that was Ocean's 12.
You're going to kick yourself when I tell you.
Not that one with the minis, is it? The English heist or something?
The Italian job.
No,
yeah. They're trying to be centred around sort of properties, certainly that have toys. And there's a lot of toys for this. If I call it a... instead of a group of friends, if I call it a fellowship of friends? Spend 9 hours returning jewelry.
That is Lord of the Rings, isn't it?
That's good.
Well, it's a piece of jewelry.
That's true.
It's a wedding ring.
That's true. This is all about explaining toy properties badly. Yep. Okay. Just a big CG robot mess.
No, Transformers.
Yeah.
The GoBots movie.
I was more going the Michael Bay movies.
I was just
going to
say, it sounds like the Michael Bay.
Charles would have got that one. Okay. A professor sets up a school for dangerous adolescents where none of the staff have any teaching qualifications. I think that's a very important point to cover.
You would have thrown me off. Yeah.
School of Rock. I've Jack Black.
I've worked in education a long time. Having qualifications usually helps. Okay. An attractive man's sage advice is constantly ignored.
Wise advice.
For reference, the hot man, his name is Ian.
It's not Conan then.
This one's a little bit obscure, but it's a property we all know.
It is Jurassic Park.
Very good. What is the sage advice, Trent?
Chaos, chaos, chaos.
Well, life finds a way. Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah. He's a chaos theorist.
He had some of the letters in there that were.
Yeah. That's true.
A bipolar man has an uncle with no face.
I think Trent's got the shadow.
Is it He-Man?
Yep. And I know Skeletor is not always perceived as the uncle. I sort of went with the MYP stuff for that. But I was just like, how do you... Yeah, it's the whole thing about this is it's forcing you to think differently because we're all about the details here on this show. And this is like, no, this is explaining it in one line in about the poorest possible way you can do it. Okay, adopted kid's older brother won't let him hold the hammer.
That's Thor.
Noseless guy has an unhealthy obsession with a teenage boy.
Noseless guy.
Noseless.
Trent laughed. I thought he had it for a second, but
I just thought of Red Skull, but that doesn't work because there's no teenage boy in Captain America.
Michael Jackson never did anything.
No. That's not where I intended that to go, for sure.
That's a thing, isn't it?
The said noseless guy is the villain, and you probably shouldn't say his name because people get scared.
It's Harry Potter.
Yes.
Yes, of course. Voldemort.
That's right. This one's very much a toy-centered one. A space cowboy has multiple spirit animals.
Brave Star. Yeah.
Yes. army men who really, really don't like reptiles.
Starship Troopers.
G.I. Joe. Yes. Spaceship Troopers. Did you say Starship Troopers? Starship Troopers.
They were bugs, though.
Yeah, I know. That's not Starship Troopers, yeah.
Man buys a singing rabbit from Chinatown. The rabbit gets wet. Shush, Ben. The rabbit gets wet. Breeds lizards, and the lizards destroy the town.
I was close.
Godzilla.
Man, you didn't let me finish. A father trains his sons to get revenge on his former bestie.
Ninja Turtles.
Yes,
it does. Yeah.
Very good. Yep. Five international friends get matching jewelry.
Captain Planet.
Yes. four guys each have a kid, but they never talk about their mothers. Did I say four or five?
Oh, that's that Arnie one, 9 months.
No. So it's four guys each have a kid, but they never talk about their mothers, like the kids' mothers. Getting a lot of blank here. No. One of them, it's probably Darren in particular, is a big fan of
Defenders of the Earth.
Yes. Because I was reading up about that, and I was like, I've got to try and get a Defenders of the Earth one in there. And then it's got all of them there, and then they've each got their kids. Yeah. And nowhere was, I think there's one episode where they briefly mention Flash's kid's mother's name. Like the mum's...
Right. They're
not in the show. They're not in the toys. They're not represented anywhere.
She dies
anywhere.
In the first episode, that's why.
Oh, does she?
Yeah, she dies in the pilot. Okay.
Right.
That's probably why I didn't get it, because she's in it.
Technicalities, please.
Okay, a pure-hearted man is murdered. Days later, he rises from death with a message for mankind.
I was going to say The Crow, but it's not really a message for mankind,
no.
Is it?
No.
It's more
what did you say, Ben?
Superman.
No, this is a good one, Superman but no. Style. This is probably... Yeah, I'd say it's in Ben's wheelhouse, this one, as far as who... Who knows this property the most?
Not RoboCop.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
Rises from the grave. Yeah. A janitor gets a really terrible makeover. Far out, you're good at this.
I love Netflix. I watch a lot of Netflix.
Five pilots can't color coordinate their rides.
Voltron.
Yes. Yeah. Oh man, this is going better than I thought it would. Refugees have a fight with an Egyptian mummy.
This is Thundercats.
Yes.
Oh, well done. I was thinking 300, because he's Egyptian a little bit.
Yep. An archaeologist fails to get an important religious artifact into a museum.
Raiders of the Lost Ark?
It belongs in a museum. Yeah. Indiana Jones in general. I heard a theory where someone just went, Indiana Jones actually fails at everything he does in all those movies. He does it well, and they're amazing movies, but everything he sets out to achieve, it never actually works for him.
Yeah, very true.
Some muscly people beat up on parked cars.
Street Fighter.
Yep.
When you're bonus level.
Exactly.
That's like, you know... Oh, no, we won't talk about that.
Yeah. A cancer survivor who never loses his sense of humour.
Philadelphia?
No.
It wasn't
not
cancer,
quite that time. This is very topical at the moment. They just had a trailer come out. Yes.
Oh, very
well done.
Good one. Well done.
A talking frog convinces a son to kill his father. Frog's probably not the right word, but he is green.
Oh, that's Star Wars. Yeah.
A father reunites with his long-lost son and wants him to take over the family business.
The Godfather? No. That's
not. Give us a hint, man.
You just said the answer to the last one. What was the answer to the previous one?
Star Wars.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I'm trying to work it out.
Yeah.
So what's the family business?
Wants to join the dark side, take over everything.
The empire.
And last one, a handsome mercenary who owns a pet bear intervenes to stop incest between a brother and a sister. All right, that's me done.
Very good. All right, that's a lot of fun.
That was fun.
Yeah,
that was
a lot of fun. Yeah. So thank you everyone for joining us on our 65th episode, and thank you very much, Leanne, for coming on to Toy Power. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have. And
definitely.
Absolutely hope that you find your way back here.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Leanne. It was really amazing to talk to someone who's, you know, kind of got a bit of a dream job. We've all got sort of boring jobs, and your job's in the industry that we spend all day talking about. So that's it's fantastic to hear.
Social work's not boring.
Leanne, tell us where everyone can find you. You know, where you're located on the interwebs.
My website is leannehanna.com. And then bluemilkspecial.com, where we have our webcomic. I'm also on Twitter at my handle Stratos Maca. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's pretty much me.
Awesome.
Cool.
Awesome.
Thank you very much, Leanne and Trent, Ben and Frank, and all our loyal listeners and our Patreons, of course. Want to wish one and all a good journey. Until next time.
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/ToyPowerPodcast. At Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram. Or have your say and email us, ToyPowerPodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher. And please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.
We are a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Check out all the awesome shows on this awesome network full of okay people. Want to learn more? Go to GiantSizeTeamUp.com, where you can find us and a whole lot more awesome shows. Well, they're not more awesome than us, but good. Yeah.